Hello and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcasts. I am this annoying little blonde, speaking from a gentoo box. I am not real. You can make me say anything you want to. In this podcast, Comperky is going to ramble, unlike he always does. I told him not to mumble his words, to talk clearly, and prepare for the podcast, so he does not sound like an idiot. Does he listen to me? Nope. But for some good news, Weirded Out has given us another great tip. Be sure to check it out. Comperky talks with Verbal about Linux stuff, our first Linux installs, Slackware, PreXOR, Asterisk, and Python. Plus a surprise visit from Mrs. Verbal. If you want to contact him, please email david@linuxcrazy.com. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
G'day David, g'day Linux Crazy listeners. This is Weirded Out, and today I would like to talk about keeping your /tmp directory nice and clean. Now there are two ways you can achieve this. One way is well suited towards people who tend to reboot their machines quite frequently, users who perhaps use Linux on the desktop or on their laptops, and the other method is suited towards Gentoo Linux servers. Now firstly, for desktop and laptop users, the likelihood is you'll be rebooting your machines every so often. And if so, the best way you can keep your /tmp directory nice and clean is to edit a very small file which can be found in /etc/conf.d, and the file name is bootmiss. That is B-O-O-T, M for Margaret, I-S-C. Now, at the bottom of this file, you will find an environment variable called wipe_tmp equals no, and the no is in quotation marks. All you will need to do is change the no to yes, and what that will do is each time you reboot your system, it will delete any files or directories that are in that /tmp directory, which is a very nice and convenient way to keep that directory nice and clean. Now for Gentoo Linux servers, there is a cron job that can be set up, and there is a neat little package in Portage called TempWatch, which is TM for Margaret, P, W, A, T, C, H. So if you emerge this package, it will basically just set up a cron job, and you'll find a bash script in /etc/cron.daily. Now this file does a little bit more than clean out your /tmp directory. It also cleans out potentially old packages from your dist files directory in your portage, in your USR portage directory, and also too it'll potentially clean out your log files, your portage log files, which can be found in /var/log/portage. So you can, what you will need to do in order to be able to do this is to uncomment out certain aspects of this cron job or this bash script which can be found in that cron directory. And one of the neat things about this particular program is it's set to run each day and will only delete files that are older than a certain time or a certain number of days, weeks, whatever the case may be. So when you're talking about servers, this is very important because you don't want it to delete temp files that are currently being used. So there you go, David. This is my little tip for today. Hope you're having a great time, and I'll enjoy listening to your podcast. Bye for now.
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, Verbal.
How's everything?
Good.
Man, how cool is that asterisk box?
Pretty nice, huh?
I love it. I love it, and I don't even have it. It's killing me. I got to set up an asterisk box.
Yeah, Yeah, it's pretty easy to do, really. Everything is pretty much free. Even the handbook is free.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, have you ever done any conferencing with the Asterisk Box?
Yes. Yeah, it works good.
So how many? What's the most amount of people you've ever had on a conference?
Well, I've only had me and two other people. That's all I've tried with it.
Okay.
But I, supposedly you can do a lot, but I don't know what would happen with the bandwidth.
Right.
I have DSL, so
right.
I have pretty good DSL, but I don't know what would happen.
But
I'm sure probably up to about six people would be all right, I would imagine.
That really sounds nice. Yeah. And I don't know, your conference, I guess your podcast, when you do interviews, they're all taped on or recorded through the Asterisk Box, right?
Yes.
Oh, they sound really nice, you know.
I played around with it a little bit before. I was talking too loud, it seemed like, and I couldn't figure out how to regulate it. But it was you regulate it with the phone. I have the IP phone, so I think I got it regulated. I got the volume, my output volume on 3, and the input volume from you calling to 5. So I'm hoping that'll do it.
Uh-huh. So are you recording right now?
Yes. Yeah. It what happens is called the dial plan.
Okay.
And in the dial plan, I have it to where whenever the call comes in, it just automatically, it's called monitoring, so it just automatically monitors. So every call is recorded.
Okay, that's nice.
You could get it, you can do it real sophisticated to have it just recorded certain times or just coming from certain numbers. I mean, it's you can do so much with it, but I keep it kind of simple, so it records every call. I use mine pretty much. My home phone number is, it's just for the DSL. You know, I don't really use the number.
Right.
So mainly all I get is just junk calls because I use my cell phone for, you know, basically for my phone.
Okay.
And everybody that knows me, they know my cell phone number.
Right.
So the Asterisk Box, what it does is it's kind of like it screens the call. So
right.
When you call... You heard there it said you had to press an extension? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
If you didn't press an extension, it'd just hang up on you. So if anybody that calls it's just an automated call, it's just going to hang up on them. So you have to be, a person has to physically press something to get through. And no, they don't know. I don't tell them the extensions to press. So the only one I tell them is 8 in case they want to leave a message, you know.
Right, okay. Wow, that sounds really nice. Wow.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. It took me a while of playing around with it. Just like anything else, I'm pretty persistent. So once you kind of get used to it, it's pretty easy. I got it running on an old IBM Net. I think it's called Net Vista. And it's a P4 with 2.4, and I got 1 gig of RAM in it. And you get these cards, these... It's actually where you plug your regular phone line into it.
Okay.
And the people that have these boxes, they have big call centers that run Asterisk, and you know, they might have a pretty expensive card. I have a El Cheapo card.
Uh-huh.
It's basically what it is a Motorola modem.
Okay.
That they do something to it. I think I think it's really simple what they do. They just I don't know how they do it, but they sell them on eBay, and they work with Asterisk as far as so that you can hook a regular, they call it POTS line, a regular POTS line to the Asterisk Box.
So these cards, are they like PCI cards?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just like a regular old, you know, phone modem card that you had in the old days. It's exactly like that, and they do something to it in order for it to work with Asterisk.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a little firmware or something that they load into it. I'm not exactly positive how that works.
Wow. See, I have got to set up an Asterisk box.
Yeah, it's real cheap. If you have any kind of a box sitting around, you can play around with it, and then you just put it on your home network and run it. And you don't even have to hook it up to a regular phone line. You can just run it on the home network and use cell phones and play around with it and just call from one computer to the next, you know?
Okay, right.
That's how I started out, just kind of installing it and then calling from putting a cell phone on it and setting it up and just calling from one PC to the next. And Slackware's real good for it. You know Slackware, so Slackware's real good for it.
Okay.
Because you can compile just about anything with Slackware. Mm-hmm. Really all you need is just a basic install.
Okay.
And just so that you can, and Asterisk is a real easy, it's a real easy compile, and you just compile that. And that's what I go get the, you know, the source from and compile it. And then it seems to work the best that way. There's a few good video podcasts on it or screencasts on it too about installing Asterisk.
Okay.
It walks you through it.
Yeah. I saw that there were a few like distros. Like I think one might have been called like Slasterisk, like Asterisk on Slacks.
I haven't seen that one, but that one would be pretty cool. Yeah, I guess people run it on live CDs even.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Now, have you used any of the? I guess they call them SIP phones.
The what?
The SIP phones, SIP.
Yeah, that's what I have right here, right now.
What model is that?
It's let me see. I have to look at it. To be honest with you, I forget. This one is like a cheap one. I forget what it is. It's a cheap one though. It's not like one of the major brands like a Polycon or.
Is it like maybe $30 or something like that?
It was like about $100.
$100? Okay.
Yeah, I got this particular one because it works on IAX.
Okay.
That's a different
protocol.
Yeah. But I'm using it on SIP now. It'll use either SIP or IAX. There's one IP phone that I was thinking about getting. They're called Snoms. They're real good. They're expensive though. They're like $200 or $300.
Okay.
But it actually runs Linux on it.
Oh really? Wow. So what do you like about those the newer, the expensive IP phones? Do they give you like more functionality?
Yeah, I've never owned one, but I just read about them. You can do so much with them. This simple one is fine for me, but you can do so much with them. I don't know. There's just so much you can do with them. They got screens on them, LCD screens that do all kind of stuff. They have little. You can go on the web with them.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can. They have them like in these call centers to where they'll have scripts running on them in the LCD. So like if you're talking to people, you can press a number and it'll come up with an answer to. You know, like if you're doing like support or something.
Because you know what I would like to do, and I don't know, I think, I can't remember where I heard this, but I heard that if you normally, okay, like here in Chicago, we use like a SBC as the phone company, but
mm-hmm.
normally when you have just regular phone service and then you get DSL, so I guess what you can do is you can say, okay, I don't want regular phone service. I just want DSL. And I guess it would be cheaper. But I guess they don't really want to give you that. But if if you're persistent about it, I guess you can get it. Because if you just need DSL service, theoretically you could save money and then just run your own like PBX.
Yeah. I'm with Bell South,
right?
And there's something else. They want you to have a regular phone service. You can
right.
get it without it,
uh-huh.
but they charge you about the same amount. So
it is the same amount.
Yeah, they don't really give you that much of a break.
Oh, then if it's the same amount.
Yeah, I was at one point in time I wanted to get just a plain data line,
right?
Like with Speakeasy or someone.
Right.
To where you just have a dedicated, you know, a data line.
Right.
But Bell South is, they're such a conglomerate that they hog all the good lines.
Yeah.
So that Speakeasy couldn't really give me that great of speed compared to what I get with Bell South. So, you know, They're like a monopoly. You just have to kind of go with the flow, I guess. So
Yeah.
they wanted me to get like long distance on it on the phone and everything, because they try to do these bundles where they try to sell you this bundle where they want to bundle you with VoIP and TV and everything, you know. But all I really need is just them for is just the
There you go.
DSL. So
Wow.
I just get the basic phone, you know, phone line, local, no long distance, and then I spend all my money on the fastest internet I can get.
Yeah, that's good. You know what you should do? You should do like a little mini series just on, you know, straight from scratch, how to set up a asterisk box. Because I know there are a lot of people out there that think that asterisk is really nice, but you know, I think they just maybe a little bit confused about it or don't have
Right.
time anymore. Because I know I've really been wanting to set up an asterisk box for a long time, so.
Yeah, I did one where I had my configuration files and stuff a while back.
Yeah,
But
I saw that one.
yeah, I probably need to slow down and maybe do it piece by piece. I do it how I do it. I installed Gentoo, the basic install of Gentoo. So with that, I got everything to compile whatever I need to, and then I just get the. I don't even use the Gentoo package for asterisks.
You just use the source.
Yeah, I just get the source, and it should only takes about, I don't know, gosh, no, not even 5 minutes for it to compile and everything. Now you can when you configure it, there's special commands that you can use to when you configure it to add extra stuff to it to the install. They're changing it all the time. They're up to like 1. I mean, it's a lot of development going on with it. It's up to 1.6, and I actually have running 1.4. But I'm not even going to fool with it. I mean, it's serving my needs right now, so I mean, I'm not even going to fool with, you know, upgrade and everything. I got it working just exactly the way I want it now, so I'm just going to let this keep running until something happens, and then I'll worry about it then, you know.
Yeah.
You know, security is a big thing too, I guess. I'm tied in with Call With Us, which is a that's what the number that you call, that's how you get the number. It's
Okay.
called a DID.
Oh yeah, 'cause you I guess you have to buy that
Yeah, you have to buy
program.
that. Now that's real cheap. It's the one I have is it's $10. It's $10 a month. Well, I say real cheap, it adds up. But anyhow, it's $10 per month. But I can call, I mean, if I ever needed to make long distance calls, you
Yeah,
know,
so just
I can call like Mexico for about nothing, and Europe and all that. I mean, it's really cheap, you know.
but now since it's through the internet, there aren't any tolls, right? You don't get charged for calling like any other places.
Yeah, well, you do if you're calling the a number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But if you're calling like another SIP phone, I guess.
Yeah, right. If I get their whatever their address is, it's almost like, you know, yeah, if I get their direct address, yeah, I can just call straight direct.
Yeah, so from SIP phone to SIP phone, it's just through the internet. But if you were calling a landline,
Right.
you would get the regular.
Yeah. If I had to go through that DID, if I had to go through my provider, that's where they charge you. Well, they don't actually charge me. Yeah, they charge me calling out. I don't. It's free incoming. All incoming calls are free,
Okay.
but if I happen to have a call, if I call out, then they charge me. It's a nominal fee, but they do charge me. But you know, it's cell phones now, the way they are. I know mine. I got so many minutes and everything else, and that I call. You know, I use my cell phone for just about anything. This IP phone is pretty much just for fooling around. You know, like I said, I really only use it as basically as a screen my calls. That's about it. And well, a big thing I use it for is recording podcasts.
I mean that is so great because it's really easy to record both sides of the conversation.
Yeah. That conference thing you were talking about, now you can set it up two different ways. You can Right now, I have it set up so that it just records both sides of the call at once. At first, when I set it up, I didn't know any different, and I had it to where it would record my side of the conversation when you're on the conference call, my side of the conversation, and then your side of the conversation.
Okay.
And but I tell you what, it was a little tricky to get them. Now it was great because I could regulate the volume. You know, I could change because it was two different WAV files. It was one WAV file of just me, and then one WAV file of just you.
Oh, so, that's great. And then you can combine them.
Yeah, that's what you did. It was easy to regulate the volume because I could, you know, boost mine up or lower yours or whatever. But combining them was a little tricky. Cause the first time I did it, because we don't, when the recording starts, it starts when I call.
Okay.
And then when you call, it's not exactly lined up perfect. So you have to, I had to jockey one side or the other to get it lined up right so I didn't overlap and so it didn't sound funny. So I just put them both together right now. Yeah, we'll have to do a conference call. Russ wants to do it, and another fellow that's real nice that I've been doing, he's been giving me some tips, and I did that last podcast with him, Weirded Out. He'd like to get in on it, so
okay.
we'll do a conference. I think Russ said maybe next Friday would be all right with him, but just let me know, and we'll all get together and we'll do a conference and kind of a roundtable. We'll come up with some topics and.
So I wonder even if, you know, you could do like, if say like three people had their own asterisk box, and because I'm wondering how you could sort of like maybe each like share the bandwidth, because I'm thinking maybe see I'm trying to think.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't work. Now you can tie two asterisk boxes together, and that's what that IX protocol is. It's asterisk native protocol, and big corporations, they'll have, like, if they have an office in New York and they have an office in, let's say, LA, they'll have their two servers. They'll have the two asterisk servers tied together, and actually, what you do is you can call. You can call the number that's in LA, and an extension will actually just run all the way to New York. You know, so you could have, you just, people could call in, could just call one number,
right,
and press an extension, and it would go all the way to, you know, wherever. It could go to Hong Kong or wherever they wanted it to go. Yeah.
So it's dialing like an outside area code.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, but you don't, for a conference call, it comes in. I guess I'm sure there's maybe a way to do it, but. Most of the conference calls that I've heard about is that, you know, the one box is basically where the conferences all go to.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, how to sort of like not use all the bandwidth and sort of like spread it through, like, say, three different people. But maybe that wouldn't work. Right?
I don't really think that it uses. I don't know if it uses the IP phones use that much. Bandwidth, really. I think the more problem you have is not so much bandwidth anymore. It's just the distance that it has to go.
Okay.
You know, like for me and you talking, I mean, it's going to be clear as a bell. Now, when I get called, like that guy Weirded Out, he's calling from Australia, and it did pretty good. A couple times you'd hear a couple little glitches.
Yeah, it did sound good.
But I had one guy called from, in fact, it was Nettie Sagoon from Gentoo, one of the he's now the head of the trustees for the Gentoo Foundation. He called from, he's in Scotland, but he called on a landline, a regular phone, and I guess because it had to go, you know, wherever it went, and then under the sea, and then coming over here, and then tying in back up to IP, that didn't sound too good. But now that wasn't the IP problem, that was actually the regular copper line problem.
Right.
When he called me on a soft phone, I mean, it was clear as a bell all the way from there. So once we got on the internet and we were running across the internet, it was clear.
And there was no delay at all?
No, you can't. I think it's so fast that it's, a human being can't even hardly notice it.
That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
Wow.
At the beginning, when I first installed it, I would play around with it and everything. And like I said, I've got it pretty much settled in now, so I don't even too much fool around with it. I just let it be.
That is truly amazing.
Hey, Verbal.
Yeah.
How and when did you get interested in computing?
Wow. It's been I don't know, I think it was in the mid 80s, and a friend of mine had a Commodore computer, and I think at first I thought all people use computers were like mainly games, and he had a typing program, and I always wanted to learn how to type, you know. I thought that would be a pretty useful thing to know. And so he had a Space Invaders game, and he wanted to show me that game. And this was on like a Commodore with like a cassette. It was loaded from cassette tape. And I wasn't interested in the Space Invader type game. It was called Letter Invaders. And on the other side of Letter Invaders was a typing, well, a typing game. I think the typing game was called Letter Invaders, but one of them was a game, and the other one was sort of a typing tutorial. And I just like fell in love with that Commodore computer and the typing game. So I stayed up like half the night playing with that thing, and he showed me like it was written in BASIC, and he showed me the BASIC code, and because I wondered, I says, well, how does it keep track of how many words per minute you typed, and how does it keep track of how many mistakes you made? And so he showed me the BASIC code, and after that I was just hooked. And I actually went out and bought a Commodore, but the Commodores the way you programmed the Commodores was a little bit strange. You had the pokes and peaks, you know. You had to poke different values in different, like, memory locations. And I really didn't understand, you know, the logic to that at first. It took me a while, but I wound up getting rid of the that Commodore. I actually got it from Toys R Us. And I took it back because it was a little bit too confusing, and I thought I wanted to get a different computer, one that was a little bit easier to use. So I started looking around, and about that time the PC Junior was out, and it was on TV and on commercials and things like that. And I sort of narrowed it down. I think it was, I could have got an Apple IIc, I think the model was at that time, or a PC Junior, or I could have gotten an IBM PC. But around that time, the IBM PC was running like $4,000.
Wow.
I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, so maybe I better get a cheaper computer.
Yeah.
So I wound up, and I remember that Apple had the Lisa, and it sort of wound up being an orphan computer. So I was thinking, well, maybe I want to go with, like, another company rather than Apple. So I had a choice between the Apple IIc, I think it was. It was a slim Apple with the, like, you know, really, it was a really slim, it looked nice, but I just was afraid that they would just abandon it like they did the Lisa. Or I could have gotten the PC Junior, and that's what I wound up getting. I got a PC Junior and started playing around with that. And
who made the PC Junior?
IBM.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, IBM. And after using the PC Junior for a while, I wanted to, you know, back then Lotus 1-2-3 was really big, and I wanted to, you know, learn about spreadsheets and play around with those. And the IBM, the PC Junior couldn't run it. Well, it could run it, but you had to use like a special cartridge version of Lotus 1-2-3. And I didn't want to have to get like special versions all the time for the PC Junior. So I sold the PC Junior to a family member, and I got just like a clone IBM PC. And that was my my first baby.
Uh-huh.
Really my first baby, but it was really fun because I could run all the different software, and I just started getting more different computers from it, and it just went on from there.
When did you first try Linux?
What's wrong with my voice tonight? I don't know. I first tried Linux in 91. I was reading in what magazine? I think it was PC World. PC World. I think it was John Dvorak had a column. He does the Cranky Guy or something podcast.
Yeah.
I don't listen to it, but I just remember that he does some type of podcast now. But he had this article about an OS like Yggdrasil Linux that you can buy, and it was like a live CD that you can buy for only like I think it was like $39. Yeah, $39. And I was like, wow, because I always wondered about the different OSs like CPM and but then I was running DOS, but I still wanted to look at CPM or Unix or something like that, or Linux. So when I saw that they had this Linux that you can get and just boot it from a CD, I thought that would be like pretty interesting to use. So I got that and started just playing around with like directory commands and different command line things, and I thought that was really neat. And but it was from, it was running from a live CD, so you really couldn't change anything and
right.
Keep your changes. So I said, well, this is nice, but I want to use I just want to install an actual version of Linux. So at that time, Slackware was out, and that was around Slackware version 3.
Uh-huh.
So I loaded Slackware. It's funny because, if you look at installing Slackware today and installing Slackware back in the 80s, it looks to be, almost the same. At least it's not like a GUI installation.
Right.
It's like text-based.
Right.
It works. It's nice. But it's funny that it hasn't really changed that much. So I ran Slackware for a while, and that was nice. And after a while, I started running. What did I run after Slackware? I had Yggdrasil Slackware, and then I went to FreeBSD. And because a lot of the internet providers were using FreeBSD then, and that was around like version, I think it was like 4 or 4.3, something like that, because it was really, really stable. And that was really, really nice. And I guess the thing that made me go back to Linux was there were not as many packages, like new packages that you could try out for FreeBSD. Whenever you saw, like, hey, there's this new program, it would run in under Linux, but not under FreeBSD.
Right, right.
So I said, well, maybe I better try, Linux again, because they're always coming out with something new, something different. And like I said, not that I didn't like FreeBSD, it just didn't seem to have as many new packages. It was very, very stable. The only problem I really remember having with FreeBSD was one of the scripts. It kept crashing. During one installation, it kept crashing, and I narrowed it down to what happened was, there was a faulty screensaver. So once I changed the screensaver, all my crash problems were gone. So after I ran FreeBSD for a while, I started using Red Hat. I think it was like 5.1. I think Dolphin was the like the code name for it. I ran that for a while. Then I went to Mandrake, and that was around like version 10.
Oh wow.
And 1.
Yeah, I remember like Mandrake 9.2 was like, that was like the cat's meow in the day.
Yeah.
It was
really nice.
Yeah.
And I ran Mandrake for a while, and then I just started using lots of different distros just to see, you know, what was out there and what was new. And I think right now, I just love live CDs because you just burn them, pop them in, and play around with them.
Right.
You don't have to, like, destroy your hard drive.
Right.
Wipe everything out.
Yeah.
If you don't like the live CD, you just pop it out and, you know, put another one in or use your desktop OS.
Right. Yeah, and their computers have gotten so powerful now that,
oh, yeah. You
know, the live CDs run. You know, in the old days, you put a live CD in a slow computer. I mean, it was
right.
Like... My patients couldn't handle it, but anymore, you know, the computers are so powerful that the live CDs actually run not too awful bad in there.
Oh, yeah, really, because, you know, with a lot of RAM and maybe even just, you know, if you have a Linux install, which normally I do anyway, you have a nice swap file, even if you don't have a lot of RAM, it runs, you know, they'll run pretty decent. And with the advent of things like damn small Linux, and Fluxbox and, you know, TidyMe and, you know, PC Linux MiniMe, a lot of the smaller distros, like the one like Slitaz now, it's, you know, you get these little tiny, like Slax, you have these small distros that, you know, are just really fast, you know. So now these days, I still like Slackware, but I haven't run it in a while. I'm thinking about setting up a Slackware box again. I was just looking on their site, and they actually came out with like the KDE, I think 4.1. They're supporting that now.
Wow.
But I think my right now my distro of choice, which could change at any minute, because like I said, I like to, you know, use different distros. But I like Arch. Arch is really nice.
Right.
Actually, on the upcoming version of my podcast, I'm going to do a tutorial on, like, getting starting from the Arch Live CD and installing a Xorg and getting,
right,
Firefox running, you know. So, I've got part of that recorded, but I have to do editing on it, and, you know, I will probably get that out tomorrow. Yeah. So, yeah, Arch is good. And I like Ubuntu. That's really nice. And Zubuntu, because it's lightweight. I tend to like really lightweight distros, because a lot of times, you know, I'll have like an old junker laptop or something like that I want to play around with. And, you know, if you start loading all these, like, you know, fancy effects like CompEAs and things like that, it's just, I've never even run CompEAs. You know, I anything that's really lightweight, I love it.
I have one box with it, the CompEAs Fusion running on it. I just wanted to see what it's like, and it's pretty neat too, like if somebody comes by and you know,
yeah,
people are, you know, Windows users, you know, that can really get their eye. That really impresses them when they see something like that, you know. So,
yeah,
you know, but I just keep one box. That's the box I do the podcast on.
Okay.
But it just sits, that box is another one of those boxes, it's got Gen 2 on it, but I just let it sit there. I probably upgraded it maybe 2 or 3 months ago, but I'm just going to kind of let it sit and not really fool with it until maybe something happens to it.
Cause
I got so much stuff stored on there, you know? I mean, I back it up, but I just hate to lose it all. And everything's work. You know, once you get a box that everything's working perfect.
Yeah, you just want to leave it running.
I know. I'm so afraid to do anything with it. I remember you talking about Slackware. I remember when I did my first Slackware install, and for me it was, you know, the F disk about partitioning the hard drive.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. I knew for sure that I was going to mess something up, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing how far you come, you know. I remember I went online because I and somebody had did a real great little tutorial on installing Slackware, and I went through that, and that's what really helped me. And I was so proud of myself when I got it installed. It was, you know, I was like, whoa, I don't believe it, you know. And that's how I got started fooling around with Fluxbox, because if you just installed the first CD, you had everything worked. It just you had Fluxbox, so I just used the first CD and started playing around with Slackware.
You know, one thing about Slackware that has really, really amazed me is, when I first used Slackware way back in the day, my biggest problem was getting the GUI to work, you know, getting
right.
the monitor set up right.
Right, right, right.
You know, and that was always a pain because, you know, I didn't know about
it. I know it.
You know, you just didn't know, you know, much about your hardware.
Oh, I know. You just didn't have a clue. That back then, too, used to, I think when I used that FX, after 86, something, 4.config or something like that, before the Xorg days, and you'd come up to the screen and it would ask you, you know, what's the horizontal sync and the vertical sync.
I mean, like, normally, most people don't know that.
I didn't have a clue, you know.
And
so I was guessing, you know.
Yes, yes. And to get it right, you know, you really have to, you know, just guess sometimes. Like, it will ask you, well, how much video RAM does you
have? Yeah, right.
No.
What? What in the world is that?
These days, I mean, because I guess, you know, I've had experience.
Right, right.
You know, and now there are tools that you can use to find that out. It would be easier. But now even the installation process is much easier.
Right.
Back in the day, you know. But, for me, video was always the biggest problem. But with Slackware, it's like I'm always able to get, like, really nice-looking fonts. With Slackware,
right?
Even with Arch, following the tutorials, it just seems to default to a really like lightweight, you know, kind of. I like to have nice, crisp, sharp fonts. And,
oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, I just you know really haven't been able, you know, to get it sometimes.
I found that if you have a in the home directory, you have a dot. Font config.
Well, I think it. I'm not even sure, but on my main machine with Arch, it's fine. I think sometimes it depends on the video card that you have.
Right.
But
it depends on the monitor too. About you can change the settings for an LCD or for a CRT.
Yeah.
But
I guess that's the thing because. On the machine, the latest machine that I set Arch up, it works fine and everything, but the font is just a little bit lightweight for me. And like I said, I really like to have nice,
sure.
clean, heavy fonts.
Gentoo has if you go on Google, if you go Gentoo and Xorg and fonts and search that, it's got a great tutorial on it, and it'll work for Arch too. It's just basic. It's basically for Xorg, and it'll work on Arch. What happens is when you install these, you're talking about using a lightweight window manager too, right? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Box.
Yeah. What happens with KDE and GNOME and that, they create that, they'll create this file for you, but a lot of times when you're using the lightweight window managers, it doesn't create the file, but you can create it yourself. I found that with using Fluxbox a lot when I would create this file, and it's called a dot. font.config, and you create that file. It's a XML file. When you create that file, Xorg reads that, and then that's what it displays the font, so you can, depending on your type of monitor and stuff, you can check it out.
Yeah, I've got it working, but it's just, you know,
right.
Playing around with the fonts to get them the way I really like it. But yeah, I might try Gen 2. You know, I haven't tried Gen 2 in a long time. I've never actually run a Gen 2 box before.
Right.
I've like used the live CD, but I've never done a.
Right. Well, it's just like you're talking about Arch, is when you kind of get used to using a one distro. And you know all the commands and everything. I don't know. You just feel more comfortable. That's what happened with me. I got used to using Gen 2, so now it's easy for me to maintain them. It's easy for me to run them. It's easy. It's just easy. So now if I'm using Arch, I've installed Arch a few times, and then when I'm installing Arch, now I got to start reading up and, you know what I mean, investigating and find, because every distro kind of does things different. You know, well, every distro does do things just different, unless, you know, you have a Debian-based distro, sometimes they'll do things pretty much similar.
Right. Now, the one thing that I remember that threw me off with Arch is I installed it, everything was working, but then I tried to, you know, use, like, MPlayer to play, like, some AUG files, and it wouldn't play. I'm thinking, wow, what is going on? I couldn't get the sound. Well, what happens with Arch is you have to make sure that you're a part of the audio group.
Right.
Or you'll have problems sometimes playing sound. And I don't know if the latest version automatically adds you to the audio group, but I know one of the early versions, that was you know, I got stuck on that. But you know, like I said, once you get to know your distro, you know the little ins and outs that.
Right. And it takes time. You know, a lot of it is when you run into a problem and then you go on a forum or you search to try to figure out how come you're having this problem, and then a lot of it's just trial and error, you know. It takes time. That's why, you know, for new people, you know, a distro like Ubuntu, you know, is great because it pretty much, the base install at least gives you a working system that just about everything's going to work for you.
Right, right. But speaking of, like, different distros, I'm finally going to bite the bullet and try to go through the Linux from Scratch project.
Right. Yeah, Russ was talking about that.
Right. Do you think you would be interested in going through that project, setting up the Linux from scratch?
I could. Gen 2 is basically what it is Linux from scratch but with a package manager and with the with all the bugs fixed.
Okay.
But I did a Linux from scratch install one time. I got to as far as to getting it to boot, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's time consuming. it's time consuming. It's not just the compile time is part of it, but a part of it's tracking down bugs because I ran into some bugs, and like I said, you're just using the raw files that have no bug patches or anything onto them, so you run into you get some weird stuff happening, and then you have to track it down. And yeah, but it sounds like a lot of fun. I have, in fact, a spare hard drive with nothing on it that would work perfect. You don't have to have that. You can create your own partition. And do it, but then when you get done, you have to transfer it over. It's easier, really, if you just have a spare hard drive you can throw in a box and just use that. And then when you get done, you're all ready to go. You can, you know, you want to be able to at least get to the part where I did. I wanted to at least get to the part where I could boot, you know, boot something. I didn't want to go through all that time and effort and then just to have it sitting there not doing anything, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. I'd be willing to participate.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna, I think, take my time and work through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn a little bit more about the innards of the OS. And
yeah. What I can do is I could set up a wiki where we can kind of go through there and just kind of, you know, keep each other updated on what's going on or problem we ran into. I got plenty of web space.
Yeah. That would be great. I'm really looking forward to this group the Linux from Scratch group, you know, really getting off the ground. So I'm gonna keep in touch with Russ and yourself and see what, you know, how it's going. How is your Python group going?
Oh, it's going fantastic. It's a lot of fun. There's not a whole lot of people that come by to the IRC channel, but I have the Python group wiki. I have that set up, and I got a whole. I basically use that to put all my stuff on there, so you know I don't lose it. You know,
right.
And it's been a lot of fun. It's I'm slowly but surely kind of catching on a little bit, so I'm gonna stick with it. I really do enjoy it. The biggest fun I get out of it is when something I finally get something figured out and it actually works. You know,
right.
And
which wiki do you use now?
It's Python group.
But which wiki software?
Oh, I use just a second. Doku Wiki.
Okay, I've used that before.
Yeah, it just uses text files. It doesn't have, it's not hooked in with my SQL or anything.
Yeah, I've actually talked about that in an episode of my, you know, podcast. But the wiki that I like is Moyn, and Moyn is actually written in Python.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know, it's nice to go in there and look at the Python code and edit stuff and customize it. I really haven't customized it that much, but it's nice when you can do that. You know.
So, yeah, I'll have to try that out. I installed this one just because it's easy. It's really easy to install. It works fine for. Maybe if it was a big wiki, you know, maybe. But I haven't had any trouble with it. It works fine. It does the Python syntax.
I think a lot of people use MediaWiki these days. But for me, I think MediaWiki is a little overkill because it's nice as far as page layout and putting graphics in there and really making things look nice. But for me, I usually just use it for, like, keeping notes on projects and things like that. So I don't really need it to, you know, really have lots of, like, formatting or page layout features. I just want to be able to find the information. And there are certain things that I like about it. Like, for instance, if you search for a word in Moyn, when it finds it, it will highlight that word, which is really handy if you have lots of text on a page, and it'll bring up a page, but then you're like, okay, where's the word I was looking for? Well, Moyn just highlights it, which is, you know, little things like that.
Right.
Really make it, in my opinion, a really nice wiki.
Does it use a database as a back end?
No, you don't need it.
Or it's just text files, too?
Regular text files, yeah, so it's nice. It has really nice versioning, you know, like if you have, like, open pages that, you know, anyone can enter, and, you know, if someone has, like, a spam and they put, like, spam on your page, you can really easily revert back to a different page. It has, like, a nice access control list, so you can have private pages that only you can see, then public pages that everyone can see, and you can have, like, viewable pages or pages that people can view but not edit. It really has a nice ACL. The most surprising thing about MediaWiki was that you couldn't really have private pages, which is, you know, everybody has, like, you know, personal information that they don't want other people to see.
Sure.
And I was really surprised that Moyn didn't have that. I guess you can do it with add-on modules, but it just seemed strange to me that right out of the box, you know, from a standard install, MediaWiki didn't have that functionality, so I just found that weird.
How did you get into Python?
Python? I have always liked languages. I started out, like I said, with Commodore and BASIC, and I learned BASIC, and you know that was pretty nice. It was pretty understandable, and then I wanted to learn some other languages, so I got a C compiler and learned that. And then I went to C++. I didn't really get that deep into C++, but C, I was pretty familiar with that. Then I took a look at Pascal, and actually that was the big thing. My second language after BASIC would have been Pascal, but it looked so much, so similar to BASIC. I said, why even learn it? So I want something that was really different from what I was already doing, and so that's why I picked C over Pascal. But actually, I went back. I did learn Pascal because for a while I used Borland's. What was the name of that database? It was Borland. I can't think of the name of it. Borland. Not Turbo Pascal. I can't think of the name. But it was bought by Enprise. I'm just drawing a blank. But that database was written, their low-level language was Pascal. So I had to learn Pascal to learn that. So now it's going to drive me crazy because I can't think of the database. It's Delphi. That was
okay.
So I really like that. You know, it is really a nice database. But I've been meaning to look at their website to see if they're still offering that. But that was really fun, and that really sort of got me into object oriented, you know, programming and you know that whole different like. Way of doing things. But then, after I had been doing Delphi for a while, a friend of mine told me about Python, and I looked at it. And at first I really, you know, it wasn't too exciting. It sort of had to grow on me, but I really like it now. And it's now my language of choice. But I really like all programming languages. You know, for a while I did a little Perl, PHP, and but yeah, now I really like Python.
What projects are you working on now?
Ooh, right now, the podcast really takes up a lot of my time because I don't know. It seems, you know. I don't know, people like Chess Griffin and yourself and Dave Yates, you know, Chad Wallenberg, it seems so easy to just listen to a podcast. But when you think about all the work that, you know, goes into it, like especially editing, you know, just recording stuff and then you have lots of ums and ahs and, you know, mistakes and,
cough.
Yeah, you're like, why did I say that? That was stupid.
You right.
Know, like one of the things that comes to mind was in one of the podcasts, I was giving an example of the PS command to list processes.
Right.
And I said what you type is PSAUX, but that was actually a mistake. It was PS space AUX.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, it really makes a difference if people are just listening to it. Luckily, the show notes are right, but, I mean, just editing, you know. So that's my main project now is, you know, doing the podcast.
Yeah, my mind. I know what I want to say, but it doesn't come out right.
Right. So thankfully,
I know what I mean, but nobody else is going to know what I mean.
Right. What did he say? So, yeah.
Well, you know, in the prep work, I find that the prep work takes time, too. It's just figuring out what you want to do one on and doing a little bit of investigating and then writing down how you're going to do it. And, you know, everything just takes time.
Yeah. So, you know, it was funny how I started the podcast. I used to give, like, a lot of tips.
Right.
Well, you know, there's some tips that I want to give that are longer and I don't want to monopolize anyone's show or anything like that.
Right.
This podcast, so I might as well just get my own.
Yeah.
Don't worry about monopolizing theirs.
Right.
I think actually a lot of podcasts would actually welcome, you know, content, because the more content that they get from somewhere else, it's less that they have to do.
Sure. Plus it breaks it up. It's not you just doing it all, you know, and it helps too, because then, like you said, it gives the content so that, and it brings in new ideas, because a lot of times just one person doing it, it's, you know, you kind of run out of ideas after a while.
Right, right. So my main project is the podcast, and I guess my upcoming project is the Linux from Scratch.
Right.
And hopefully in the near future, I want to set up an Asterisk box, you know. So that's what's on the table.
Sure. Last year you went to Ohio Linux Fest, didn't you?
Right, right.
You going again this year?
Definitely. It was really nice. It was nice. That was my first year. Are you going to go this year?
No, I'm in Florida, but then I can't get off work. I can't take a vacation. I think one year I'm going to go ahead and plan to take my vacation when it's going on. It's going on what, next month, right?
Yes, I think it's October 11th.
Right. Yeah, I would have to plan my vacation, you know, at least like 6 months ahead of time.
Is it September or October 11th? September, I think.
I think it's September.
Well, because I remember seeing their site and it said something like 59 days.
Right.
You know. I'm going to go.
Yeah, I think Russ is going.
Yeah, Russ is going. He said he's going to take his father.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that should be really, really nice.
Yeah, I'd like to go to meet all the people. But, you know, we don't actually talk to each other face-to-face, but you run across a lot of people in this Linux world.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually called Dave Yates. Was it yesterday I talked to him? I've been doing so much I can't even get. Yeah, it was yesterday. I talked to Dave Yates because his site was down. You know, I was checking to see. I don't use a feed aggregator.
Right.
To you know, automatically download podcasts. I just, you know, just will from time to time check in and
right.
See what's going on.
That's what I do. I have them all bookmarked, and I'll cruise to their site to see what's going
right.
on.
Right.
Yeah.
And because one reason I don't do it is because I have my laptop that I take back and forth to work. Then I have, you know, the computers here, and, you know, I'm like, well, whenever I have time to listen, I'll download it, and I'll
right.
listen at my leisure. I just don't want it to come down on, like, any certain computer. So that's one reason why I don't, you know, use a podcatcher, you know. I like them, you know. They're cool and everything, but, you know, the way I listen, it's just, I just do it by hand. But anyway,
right.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, your site was down.
Oh, yeah. Dave's site was down, so I called him, you know, to see what was going on, because, you know, maybe, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe he doesn't even know his site is down unless somebody, you know, tells him. But I figure Dave is not one of those people who can be away from his computer for so long.
Right, right.
So I figured he knew it was down, and
right.
he actually did know it was down. But I guess he was having, like, problems with some equipment problems. And he was desperately working to get back online.
He runs the site out of his house?
Yes. And actually, he's back online now, which is great. You know, so he'll probably talk about that in an upcoming podcast.
Right. God, he's run that site out of his house. He's been running that site out of his house for a while.
Yeah. Well, you run your site out of here.
Yeah, but it's not like mission critical. Was, you know, the podcast I host, you know, I had somebody else host the podcast and stuff, you know.
Oh, really? I thought it was all on your.
No, uh-uh. No.
Yeah, that's how I do, because I think what would happen if I hosted, you know, the podcast, the media files out of the house. The bandwidth would just...
Oh, yeah, it killed me. Plus, my Bell South might get a little upset when they see the... So I'd get in trouble with Bell Southwest. I wouldn't be able to do anything. I don't want anybody using my bandwidth for me.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, I offload that stuff to a host.
Yeah.
And it works. It works that way.
Oh, yeah.
It was really funny. I was hosting some of, like, the PC Linux Mini-Me files, and I said, I'll just host these files because, not PC Linux, the distro called Tiny-Me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going okay for a while, but then I would notice that, oh, my everything was slow. And then I would check my FTP server, and sure enough, someone was downloading a distro, and it was really killing me. So I said, well, I can't host these files.
Right.
So I just offloaded. And now everything's fine.
Yeah, I use... where I stick my stuff is on, it's called HostMonster.
HostMonster? Okay.
Yeah. And the reason I do is because it's unlimited bandwidth. They don't, it's unlimited. And
but
then,
now, how much space do they give you to, because I know that's
a problem. Yeah, the space, well, it's a lot of space. I get a lot of space. I got, I think it's, I forget how much, but it's a lot. I got a lot of stuff on there, and it's not even registering yet.
Yeah, I think that's the way mine is.
I mean, I must have 40 podcasts on there, and about 10 of them are screencasts, and it's the hard drive space isn't even registering yet. I don't know if their monitoring system is off or what.
Yeah, well, I get a lot of space, and I don't even take a look at the bandwidth because I figure that if I'm using that much bandwidth, they'll send me an email.
Yeah.
Hey,
well, this particular one, like I said, I got unlimited bandwidth, so that's like,
that's
geez.
Great.
Now
I'll
I do.
Have to look into that.
Yeah. Huh?
I'll have to look into HostMonster.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Now I do go to. I heard Dave Yates talking about that libsyn.com.
Libsyn.
Yeah,
yeah right.
I got an account with them too. I put those screencasts on there.
Uh-huh.
The only reason I did that was because I noticed when I was downloading from the HostMonster, it's not that fast. It's only like when I download stuff, it's only like 150 or 200.
Uh-huh.
So those screencasts would maybe take people a while to download.
Right.
You know, because they're big.
Right.
So I just stick them on there, but they're really not that great because they don't, you can only put like two a month on there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Most places that give you unlimited bandwidth will sort of cut down on your storage.
Right, right, right. Hey, how's Mrs. Verbal doing with her Linux install?
She's doing okay.
Uh-huh.
Actually, she's just been using one of my actual computers, because her computer was a really old, just a junker.
Right.
We haven't even set that one up yet because there are enough computers now that we just sort of stored that one over in the corner. But
right.
I might use that as like a test machine. That might be the next asterisk.
One other time I heard you installed Arch, I guess, on one of her laptops or something. Is that the one you're talking about?
What happened was we started off with, I think, Mint on her computer. And it was nice. It was, really great. She didn't have any problems with codecs or anything. But it was, I guess, maybe a little slow. And I said, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to just take a look at this distro and just take a look at it, have an open mind, and if you don't like it, we can put Mint back on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I installed Arch on there, and she was fine with it. So, it's cool.
I get a kick out of her on your podcast.
Yeah. I think that's why people listen. It's
well, she has such a fantastic laugh,
Yeah. people don't care what I say. They just want to hear her, Like, we want to hear more of Mrs.
She's stealing the show.
Yeah, and she really helps me with the podcast because sometimes when I'm recording, you know, it just feels unnatural to me, you know, sometimes to talk into a mic. You know, if I did like a weekly podcast, I think it would just come more natural to me. But I've had listeners say, yeah, you sound more relaxed when you're talking to Mrs. Verbal, and it just sounds more, you know, it just flows better. And so, yeah, she really helps me. And that's again, one of the reasons why sometimes I'm late with the podcast, because it's sometimes hard for us to, you know, schedule time to do it.
Right.
And, you know, when I'm ready, she's not, or when she's ready, I'm not.
Right. Russ was, he does the podcast one a week, and
right.
I know, I remember I used to listen to Linux Reality all the time. It was a great podcast.
I love Linux Reality.
Yeah, and I think he did it once a week, you know, he was good, boy, on a schedule. I mean, you know, once a week, and Russ is good on the schedule. Me, this is kind of just for fun, so I'm not really too concerned about it. I try to get one out at least once a month, my goal is about every 2 weeks, but really, it's not written in stone. I don't put anywhere that I'm for sure every week at such and such a time that there's going to be a podcast. Because,
right.
Be honest with you, I probably wouldn't make it, and then I would constantly be apologizing. So I just don't say that there's going to be a podcast every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock, because it's
right.
not going to happen.
You just do it when you can, and that's the fun thing. You know, you just do what you like to do, and, you know, you don't have the stress of trying to make a deadline.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you have deadlines at work, and you don't need deadlines in your spare time.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. And it's like you said, one of the main reasons I started the podcast was just like you said, was I would be doing something, and I would figure something out, and I'd be like, I wanted to tell somebody. I guess I was so proud of myself, but I wanted to tell somebody. And plus I figured, well, maybe somebody could help somebody, you know, after all this time and effort I put into it. So
right.
I just kind of wanted to do a podcast just to kind of let people know what I'm up to, and and maybe I could help somebody.
Yeah.
Because you talk to, you know, other people about Linux, and it's like, what? You know, they don't have a clue, and they really don't want to know. Yeah.
And I just do it, I think, a lot to help the newbies out there, because I know when I was new to Linux, and it was really hard because I didn't have, you know, I wasn't a member of a lug, or I didn't really know anybody that was really into Linux, and I just had to go by myself. And I guess my biggest help was just manuals, like just online. I did lots of like reading online, but reading and hearing somebody explain something is a little different. And I think I can understand it a little bit more when I hear it, and or even see a video.
Right.
Okay, well, you know, this is for all the people out there who I can help, you know, so.
Well, and I enjoyed listening to the podcast when people were giving tips and stuff, because
yeah.
I might not get it all at the beginning, but
right.
just listen a little bit along, you know, it absorbs, you know, over time, you know, so if I just keep listening to few tips here, a few tips there, or hear how somebody's doing this. It's not all going to sink in at once, but
right.
a little along, the more information I can get is the better, you know.
Definitely, definitely. So yeah, we have to work on this mini series for Asterisk.
Oh yeah, yeah. That sounds like a good one. I've got another podcast in the works. I set up a laptop, and I cracked my wireless network here. I got in there and cracked it to get the web key. I just used
really?
A simple web key.
Wow.
But that's pretty neat to do. So I was gonna, that's one of the future webcasts is a podcast is to go through setting up a laptop to crack your home network, you know, to get your key out of your home network.
I don't use wireless. I'm strictly a wired man.
Right.
I'm old fashioned. All that wireless stuff is for, you know, these fancy folks.
Yeah.
No, it's fine, but I really don't use wireless. Which is funny because one day I brought a laptop home and I was playing around with it. I popped in a live CD and was taking a look at this live CD, and all of a sudden I was on the internet.
Yeah, you jumped on somebody else's,
Yeah, I was on
yep.
my neighbor's internet. I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, they're not very secure.
Yeah, no.
They only knew. Luckily, hopefully you wouldn't want one in your neighborhood, but I'm sure there's people that ride around in cars. I
Oh, yeah.
mean, it wouldn't put it past me. There's so many terrible people running around. There's people running around in cars and try to jump on networks and snatch the information out of it, or especially if they knew, I guess if they knew somebody that had a lot of money or something like that, because it's really not, it's time consuming, but it's not that difficult to capture the packets and get the information out of the packets.
Well, I think that's why Dave Yates does his podcast from his Honda Civic, just so he can. No, I'm just kidding.
Keep all that information private. Yeah.
No, Dave's a good guy. He would do
Yeah.
So have you come across any new podcasts that you really like?
Well, just that Russ's, that's how I got, I've been kind of so busy on my own. That Python, I'm not kidding you, Virgil, that Python takes up a lot of my time. I
Oh yeah,
spend
it's a
2, 3 hours a day,
Oh yeah.
just fooling around with it. I haven't really been listening to a whole lot of podcasts. I try to catch, the main ones. The main ones that I've been listening to, like you're talking about, Dave Yates's, and I listen to, on Wednesday night, I try to catch that one at 8:30, the Linux Link, and then I try to catch Russ's. I try to catch Russ's podcast, and the other one that Russ does is pretty nice too. Is that DistroWatch? He does a podcast for DistroWatch. I'll listen to that just to kind of catch up on the latest distros that are floating around. What are the other ones? But I used to listen to like Linux Action Show all the time and Linux Basement, and there's a whole bunch of them. But it just seems like I've downloaded them. I'm like you. I'll run around one night and I'll go around and see what podcasts are out and I'll download them. But they just sit here. I haven't really been listening to them, so I haven't really been listening a whole lot. I haven't really had a lot of time. I get involved in that Python. What happens to me is like I usually get on these projects is I'll start something trying to figure something out with Python, and then I can't hardly stop until I get it working, you know what I mean? So sometimes it takes a while, but it's a lot of fun. And like I said, the encouraging thing is I seem to be catching on slowly but surely. So I can
Oh,
see
yeah.
where I can maybe start doing some stuff with this. I did one little program where it was not really all my own, but I grabbed a couple different things from a couple different scripts and
Right.
put it together. But it's pretty neat. What I do is I log I use the MySQL as a back end, the database, and create a user and a username and a password, and then it stores it on the database just here at the house, just right here on this computer, and it stores it on there, and then it can go in. And then you can either log in, or then I set up a little menu to where it's like is L for to log in, and C is to create a new account, So it was pretty neat. I kind of went through that, and I got it set up with the little menu, and it actually works. I'm logging. I'm connecting to the MySQL. That's how you pronounce it, right? MySQL.
Yeah, MySQL, right.
Yeah, I'm actually connecting to the MySQL database, and so it's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty neat stuff. So, and I've done the Hangman games and tic-tac-toe and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I think that's what, when you're learning a language, that's one of the things you need to do is you say, you have to have a goal in mind to say, okay, I just want to write a program to do Hangman or tic-tac-toe. And then you start to learn how the language works and how to do things, and before you know it, you're pretty good at that language,
Man, I've got the bits and pieces, partially understand. My big thing now is kind of understanding how to putting everything together, the kind of the big picture. and classes. I still need, you know, I still got to understand how class, I mean, putting together classes with, you know, self and all that. I mean, I've done it and I can do simple ones, but I can't do anything very complicated at this point in time. But just slowly but surely, I'm getting there.
Hey, I'm going to see if Mrs. Verbal wants to say hello.
Okay.
She hasn't really been feeling too well lately, but she might be up, so we'll go upstairs and see.
Okay.
What's going on? Maybe you'll even get one of her great laughs.
Okay, that'd be nice.
Hey, sweetheart. How you doing?
Okay.
You doing fine?
Yeah.
Hey, I have someone who wants to say hello to you.
Hello.
Hi, Ms. Verbal. This is Dave from Lenny's Crazy Podcast.
Hi, how are you?
Good, I'm doing good. I really enjoy your podcast with Verbal.
Yeah, he's nice enough to let me sit in on them. So I really enjoy listening to your podcast.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, like I was telling Verbal, the best part of his podcast is getting a chance to listen to your laugh.
Oh, thank you. What a great compliment. Hey, did Verbal tell you that today's his birthday?
No, really?
Yes.
Wait, 39, right?
Yes.
39, wow.
He looks like it, too. He looks much younger than he is. Should I tell him how old you are?
I don't mind.
No, I won't. Well, it was nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you, too.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, yeah, hey, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, celebrating yet another birthday.
Yeah. I don't even really pay much attention to him anymore. I'm kind of used to him by now.
Yeah, me neither.
Isn't that enough of them? They can stop any time now. They put everything on hold.
Yeah, not again.
They had that country song, you know. Dave Yates, I'm sure, knows it. You know, 39 and holding on as long as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, now, Dave, on one of his podcasts, he said that there was going to be, like, maybe a Southeast Linux, expo or something like that. Have you heard anything about that? Yeah, I'm trying to find out when and where that's going to be, because maybe you want to go to that one.
Right. Well, last year, they have a Florida, like the Ohio Linux Fest, they had one for Florida, but this year it happened to be in Jacksonville, which is actually all the way on the other end of the state from where I am.
Okay.
If they have one, I'm sure that one year they got to have one down my way. I would even like to go. There's a local lug here that they meet down a little ways away from me. But all I drive, I don't even drive a car anymore. I just where I work, I live right next to where I work, and all I have is a little scooter.
So
I don't even drive around much anymore.
So we can't look forward to you podcasting at 75 miles.
No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't see how he does it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you know how he says, keep it between the ditches? I'd be in the ditch if I tried to podcast and drive at the same time.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I have a hard enough just keeping my mind organized sitting here in the easy chair and I'm on the web now looking up stuff, and as I go, it's amazing that he can keep organized to, you know, actually get the podcast through and really without too many errors.
Yeah, that's really.
A pause every once in a while for a deer crossing the road or something.
Yeah, or a Mountain Dew break.
Yeah, right. All right, Verbal, very nice talking to you as usual.
Okay, Dave.
And we'll get together on the Linux from scratch. We got to get together on the Linux from scratch, and we'll get together on the. We'll do a conference call.
Great, wonderful. Look forward to it.
All right. I'll talk to you again, Verbal.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.